Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue along. Good Friday to you. All right, so the NFL got 15 week kicked off with a bang last night. The Niners clinching the NFC West. And for the Seattle Seahawks, they are now 7-7 as the Niners go on to win last night, 21-13. Yeah, it was 21-3. Maybe many of you turned off the game, and I get it because it didn't look like the 49ers were going to give up anything after that, like just shut out the Seahawks. But Seattle got a field goal. They got a touchdown. They made this game a little interesting towards the end, right? There was a little bit of a moment there where the Niners got that big first down on the run by Purdy that sort of sealed it, and then a big 50-plus yard run that sort of iced the game. But the Niners, you know, were in a little bit of a precarious situation, but nevertheless, they go on to win. Brock Purdy becomes even more of a story as now these weeks are going to get clicked off. Now that they're in the postseason and Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo are not going to be in the playoffs. Well, Jimmy Garoppolo is a long shot if they make a deep run. But I think if you make a deep run with Brock Purdy, you just go with Brock Purdy. But nevertheless, this is the rookie's job. His job now, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that the Niners were going to make the playoffs at some point. It didn't have to be week 15. It could be week 16. But now that it's official that he's a division winner, he is going to be responsible for taking a team with Super Bowl aspirations to the Super Bowl. Is it a big ask? Of course it's a big ask, because you're asking, again, a young kid who's found no reason to be nervous of the environment to stay that way as the risk reward gets tighter and tighter. When you're in a playoff game, you can overcome an interception in a regular season because you got another game. You can't overcome it in the playoffs. A big turnover, a big failure on a drive, whatever it may be. Now, as I said in hour number one, you don't know what you don't know. And Brock Purdy right now doesn't know massive failure so far in his very brief NFL time that he's been the starting quarterback of the 49ers. He's been a great story. We've seen great stories like this in the past. Some of them have staying power. Some of them do not. But I know this. In January, Brock Purdy is going to be someone we're going to be dissecting, talking about, wondering about, a curiosity on how he'll handle whatever the 49ers have in front of them to try to get to the Super Bowl in Arizona. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Ah, good, the bad, and the dumb Friday edition. We're getting into the weekend, right? A weekend full of college bowl games and a lot of NFL. What's the good of the day?
Well, let's start right there with the college bowl games.
Okay.
And I'm going to focus on helmets.
All right, helmets.
All right. Because there's two teams so far that are showing a little bit of tribute to Mike Leach.
Yeah, okay.
The first being Mississippi State. Now, I don't know if this one has been approved yet.
Right.
But what they want to do, instead of their traditional, what, they usually have an M on the side of their helmet?
M, yeah.
Instead of going with that, they wanted to go with the pirate flag.
Why not? That sounds good.
You know, just for the bowl game.
I saw this. This was like white with a burgundy color. Of Mississippi State.
So, and then like the other one that's doing a tribute, and they are going forward with this, is Texas Tech has a pirate flag on the back of their helmet.
Very cool.
So
very
no
cool.
word yet on what Washington State.
So they're not changing the Texas Tech. They're just putting a pirate flag on the back.
Good.
That's really great. Great.
So, yeah, no word on what if Washington State's doing anything, though.
Yeah, if I'm Washington. Yeah, Washington State's got a bowl game this weekend on Saturday.
Yeah, it might have been a little too much of a turnaround. Too quick of a turnaround for that one.
Nevertheless, yeah. It's, you know what you are? I bet you hear Mike Leach sort of moments of silence all weekend, every ball game. I don't know if it lasts through the season, but at least this weekend, I think everyone will pause to remember Mike Leach. So even if the two teams have nothing to do with him, didn't play for him,
just because it was sudden.
It was just sudden, and he was a fixture in college football. He was a name. He was a recognizable person. And as we did on Wednesday, very influential. A lot of tentacles have been, spread out by Mike Leach from his early days with Hal Mumme in Kentucky all the way through to every stop that he's had. So his influence on the game is is permeated through the sport. So
yeah,
yeah, I bet you every stop will
have. And I hope the NCAA doesn't really care so much about the Mississippi State helmet, because that's a total change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a total change, yeah.
You know, I hope that, you know, they look at it for one game. It's like, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, I don't think it's a design thing. I think it's kind of goes back to what are you doing with the helmets? Are they new helmets? Are you taking old helmets and doing them just to keep making sure that the helmet, everybody's got a fitted helmet? It's like what the NFL did.
Okay.
And then the NFL realized, oh, yeah, I think the NCAA is more that than it would be changing
the aesthetics outside.
The aesthetics of your helmet. I think you're right. I think I don't think they're caring so much about that. I do say it as we talk about it with a lot of things. It's like, you know, if you ever been around a lawyer, they're five or six steps ahead of like any issue. And I wonder if the NCAA looks at those things like that, where they go, look, we don't want a slippery slope of a team changing a helmet to something political, or you know what I mean, like something that's just controversial for the sake of controversy. So we don't want to open up the gate too wide. But I think in this case, they probably will say, as long as the helmets are stay fitted and they're not brand new helmets that have to be refitted, they've been fitted at the beginning of the season for the players, we're okay with changing it. But you never know with the NCAA, they're silly. But yeah, I hope so too, because they did look nice. Those were nice for Mississippi State. All right, what is the bat of the day?
The bat of the day, we're going to the World Cup.
World Cup bad.
Yeah, because due to a loophole,
yeah,
France could be getting back one of their star players.
Uh-oh. All right, explain this story.
Now, here's what happened. Just before the World Cup began, like literally a week or two began, their star forward, the reigning Ballon d'Or, which is the player of the year,
right,
Karim Benzema, I think he pulled his hamstring. And was ruled out for the World Cup tournament. Now, when I say, I mean, he's the best player, considered to be the best player in the world. Now, the loophole is this. France never replaced him on the roster.
Okay.
He has not played 1 minute in the World Cup. In fact, he has not even been in Qatar. Well, now that they're in the final, he is fit to play, according to his club doctors. And he is now in Qatar.
So, is this controversial?
A little bit, yeah.
In terms of, all right, so explain why.
Well, you start the tournament.
I'm just trying to figure out.
No,
like,
no, no.
To me, it sounds like as long as you don't fill a roster spot.
I mean,
if he went there and didn't do a thing, just kind of sat in uniform and didn't do anything.
It's more the gentleman's honor, or, you know, baseball is like, you know, the code of baseball, the unwritten rules. Because he hasn't played any part of this tournament at all. And then all of a sudden you're bringing in, you know, probably the best player in France for
all right,
the final
so
game.
I'm gonna play not devil's advocate. I don't know what I'm doing. But if you are Argentina, let's say, or anybody, forget it, anybody that played France, would you not be sort of on the idea of, if there's an open spot, meaning they could have brought 22 players and they brought 21?
Yeah.
Then at any moment he could be available.
Right.
Is this any different than an NFL team going, we don't know if Chase Young is coming back, but we didn't fill his roster spot? Or they did. In the NFL, you can do that. But let's say they couldn't, or they didn't.
No, so I get what you're saying. I mean,
you know what I mean? They're not kicking a guy off a guy off the team before the finals. They're basically saying his spot really was here. It's now he gets to fill it.
Right. No, I totally understand what you're saying. It's not like,
but like, in soccer they don't like that. Is that a
well?
Thing?
It's just like, it feels kind of, it almost feels like a dirty trick, a dirty ploy. But you know what? It's completely legal. And I'll put it to you this way, right? Raheem Sterling, he played with England during the World Cup during the first two games. His house got broken into while he was away, and family got harassed and whatnot. He left the team. And didn't play with them, missed the round of 16 game, but came back for the quarterfinal. So, and no one batted an eye at that.
Right.
You know, because he started and he came back. You know, I mean, Karim Benzema, you know, played every single game during World Cup qualifying, even did the tune-up matches, then got hurt during training leading into the World Cup and was ruled out of the tournament. He is fit to play. France never filled his roster spot. But it's just the fact that probably because it's him. You know, if it was Joe Schmo or whatever French name you want to, you know, Pierre, whatever.
Sure.
And you wanted to bring him in for the final game. You know, I don't think anyone would care, but I think it's because he is the world, considered to be the world's best player, the reigning best player in the world.
So are the rules different for a certain level of player than they would be for the guy that you mentioned?
No.
So it doesn't, because to me, I mean, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of, it just seems like if you
no, what it does, Tony, is it provides a talking point that no one thought was coming, and then there's a little bit of controversy on top of that.
I guess there's really no way to compare it to sports here because, like I said, like a Chase Young there's a guy there that's filling the 53-man roster.
Yeah, then you can move him off.
And then you can move him off back and forth. So unless I'm thinking like Olympics, where you just are like you're just bringing in Kobe Bryant in 2008 at the last second.
It'd be something like that.
Where like he's not even there.
But we had a roster spot open for him.
Private jet is flying in for the gold medal game, and Kobe steps out of the plane, and you're like, oh, we're bringing him. But
that's probably the most accurate way of thinking about this because that's what happened with him. He took a private plane to Qatar, and you know he is coming in, literally walking in, and like, I'm just going to be here for one game. I doubt he even starts. I don't even know if he'll play.
Right.
He'll probably be on the bench, but he is available.
Don't they have another problem with like a flu virus that's going around or a cold virus?
Yeah,
they're
trying to isolate themselves as best as possible. And there was a player, I think it was like one or two players on France who are, you know, almost like as if they're kept in a different hotel.
Yeah,
completely.
That's got to be stressful.
That's kind of what happened with Morocco. Morocco's defensive line, all their starters came down with the flu. Now, most of them did play, but one of them was still in bed during the final.
Can you imagine if we were, like, we had 2 weeks of build-up of, like, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs against Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles, and then on the eve of the weekend, you found out the entire Eagles team had the flu or cold. Getting like 100% of this,
and we're talking it's Chiefs versus Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and we're just getting built up and built up and built up, and then we get to the weekend before the game, and then like, oh yeah, the entire offensive team of the Eagles has got the flu. Wouldn't you be like, we're not getting 100% like, against 100%?
Then you're like, how bad is it, though?
Yeah, right, yeah, right. How bad is it? Oh, goodness. But, well, I'm looking forward to Sunday. I'm going to wake up and watch. I'm really excited to see it. So, all right, what's the dumb of the day?
I'm sticking with the World Cup, Tony.
All right.
The dumb
of
the day.
It's Friday on the eve of the
Friday on the eve of the World Cup, and this one's great.
Okay.
British fans are set to break a dubious streak at this World Cup, Tony.
Yes.
You ready for it?
Uh-huh.
Not one fan from England or Wales or any part of the UK has been arrested.
Hey, well done.
Now, there
well
are
done.
A few more days left.
There's
a few more shopping days left, as the kids would say.
Do you think it has anything to do with you might just disappear and never be heard from again?
It could be that. It could be the fact that, you know, alcohol probably plays a part in British fans' shenanigans and in their hooliganism, if you will.
Right.
So, the fact that alcohol is hard to come by in Qatar, that you know, that could have something to do with it as well.
Well done. It's funny. Well done, guys. Being careful in a country where you might.
Now, this may not be entirely accurate, but the reporter who was doing the story, he even said this may not be entirely accurate, but he did do some searching, and he's like, yeah, a British fan has been arrested at every single World Cup there ever was.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Do you think he actually researched that, or do you think he just assumed it and figured people would just believe it?
You know
what
he probably did? I mean, because, you know, three were arrested in Russia, then he probably went back and was like, well, let's check what happened.
Yeah, he probably went back and went, yeah, right, yeah.
Pretty certain one of them was arrested in Germany. There was probably someone arrested in South Africa. There was one. You know what? Let's just assume they always get arrested.
You know what's interesting about this World Cup? It reminds me, there's a lot of Olympics where every time we get a build up to a big event like this in countries like this where it's controversial, I always feel like this is going to be a disaster and it's going to be a mess. And it never really is. It never really is. Like this seems, I know I don't want to undermine the building of these stadiums and what they went through to build these and all of that, but I didn't see a lot of massive controversy. Like when everyone was talking about like oh my God, they're putting fans in storage containers that they've made into a...
And maybe that has something to do with the Qatari officials,
yeah,
if you will, like not wanting you to film in certain areas or prohibiting you from filming certain... Because that was, I mean, it was it, right? We saw the Danish film crew that got harassed.
Yep. Just before the start of this thing, we thought, oh my God, all hell is going to break loose.
It was that, and then it was at the very last second, no beer.
But then
after that, it's been quiet. We had the, you know, obviously the tragic passing of Grant Wall, and that came up. You know, there were some conspiracy theories that started from that. But then it was determined America, you know, doctors did an autopsy, said no, it was an aortic aneurysm.
Yeah, so it's,
you know, that just happens.
And believe me, there's you know, people have gotten some stories out and whatnot. But it hasn't. It feels like all the games have gone on time and everything's rolling good and people having a terrible time and
yeah, it's
whatnot.
The, you know, the main angst of everything has been, you know, this referee hasn't called the game right. Well, you know, every World Cup.
But again,
you have a bad ref or you have a team like Morocco that's kind of spoiling the party for everyone. It's like, well, you're not supposed to be here. What are you doing?
Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like I'm waving the Qatari flag for this thing. I mean, I know all the controversies around it, but like when they had the Olympics in Brazil and they kept going, oh, this, look at this. This is not even built well. This is a disaster and this is a disaster.
Yeah, it's going to fall apart.
And this is going to break. Yeah, and then you go, oh my God, these Olympics. And then they just go and then they're done and then everybody leaves. Everybody goes, oh, that was great.
Yeah.
Right, and you know, so all of the controversy of Qatar,
we now talk about it afterwards, like, yeah, you know, right? Bankrupt Brazil, and
yeah, real quick before we go, is there any idea of what they're going to do with these soccer stadiums that they're done? I mean, is this a hotbed for?
I mean, they have their own
league and everything,
they have their own professional league, and so
the upkeep, I mean, they got money, don't get me wrong, but what do you do with them? Like, do you
That's part of the problem too. I mean, you're probably going to see reports after the final whistle is blown. You'll start seeing reports next week because one of the things that they said, what Qatar said they were going to do, was like, we will tear down these stadiums brick for brick and rebuild them in an area that, you know, give them to a club team that needs them.
Oh, okay.
That was part of their selling point.
You know what? That I want to see. I want to see when the cameras are off. That's what I want to see what happens there if they actually do that.
Yeah, I imagine they're going to keep a few.
We'll see.
I just don't think because
those are nice stadiums.
Yeah, right? I just don't think professional soccer is big enough there.
Yeah, it's a country the size of Connecticut.
Yeah,
and they've got these massively awesome modern soccer stadiums.
80,000 seat stadiums.
Yeah, what are they going to do with them? All right.
There aren't enough people to fill them, right?
Exactly. All right, as we continue, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Again, 49ers winning last night on Thursday Night Football. I was looking forward to that game. I didn't think the Seahawks were going to win it. I just think the Niners are just too good. They're kind of I'm kind of on board this 49er thing that they're doing. But I thought it could be a good game. And while the score indicated a closeness, it was 21-3 at one point. So I was ready to give up on it. Hey, at Total Wine & More, save big on what you love this December with hundreds of deals on amazing wines and spirits. Get up to 35% off of over 200 different wines and spirits, which is surprising because they've already got the lowest prices in town. Look, I was just on their site, and they've got so many good deals. And if you're looking for the right selection of bourbon, Cabernets, craft beers, these prices are so low, and a friendly staff as well, because they're knowledgeable and they're going to find you the right bottle at the lowest price. Their app makes it easy to find the best deals online. They even have your favorite bottles delivered right to your door. So love what you find at the lowest prices only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. B21. All right, so I think it was The Athletic. I want to give them credit, but I'm not sure. This morning I was kind of looking at people's reaction to the game and reading some things about the game last night. And somebody pointed out that, is Brock Purdy the best Mr. Irrelevant to have ever played? And I was like, what a weird, bizarre question to ask. You know, but I thought to myself, wait, you know what? First of all, if you were to do that, how many Mr. Irrelevance in the history of the NFL were relevant enough to be part of the formula. So the history of the Mr. Irrelevant goes back to the 70s, where there was always a last player taken in the draft as long as the draft's been around. But the concept of you being Mr. Irrelevant started in 1976. And there used to be in a week-long get-together of the Mr. Irrelevance in the draft. And they would be in Southern California. They would go to Disneyland. They would play golf. There was a roast, you know, a little fun little gathering and a little roasting of each other, big meals. It was really fun. So much so that the NFL kind of admired it, that this was put on by the first one that was called Mr. Irrelevant. But the reality of it is that there's just not a lot of players who have done really anything with the with their NFL careers enough to really make it something so that you would start acknowledging all of these different people who were drafted last. Brock Purdy now is on a very, very, very short list of guys who are the last pick in the draft to do something successful with it. But he's only been in the league for like 10 seconds, right? I mean, he took over for Garoppolo a couple of weeks ago. He won last week. He won this week. He's throwing touchdown passes. He's playing really well. But the reality of it is there's one right now that's the leader in the clubhouse. And the guy that is the most decorated Mr. Irrelevant that's in the NFL is still in the NFL today. So as Brock Purdy continues to make a name for himself as quarterback, the most important position in all of sports, this guy has been in the league for 13 years, played on a number of teams. And that's kicker Ryan Succop. Ryan Succop, by the way, went to the University of South Carolina. In case you're keeping score, like I am, there you go. But he has NFL records for the highest field goal percentage by a rookie, most consecutive kicks made from within 50 yards. He's got some Chiefs records when he played for Kansas City. He's got some Buccaneers single season records that when he's on with Tampa. He's still kicking for the Buccaneers today. Tay Crowder was a Mr. Irrelevant at one point, played a little bit with the Giants. But again, it's a difficult sort of a way to process it because you're not looking at a huge list of people that have had success in the NFL to make it worthy of sort of breaking down. But Purdy, again, I think because of what he's been asked to do in a very short amount of time, is going to make a strong case for being for winning this, especially if he keeps this up. Being a kicker is great, right? It's a long career. If you do it right, it's a fireable thing quickly. That's the one thing about being a kicker in the NFL, right? You can put up with a quarterback going through some slumps. You can put up with a running back not giving you 100-yard games because you understand circumstances, right? Maybe defenses are keying in on you. Maybe your offensive line is terrible. Same thing with quarterbacks. Maybe the weapons around this particular individual aren't that great. Kicking, it's either through the uprights or it isn't. And if you don't put it through the uprights, there's plenty of people who can. So it's one of those jobs where if you do it well, you can be in the league a really, really long time. I mean, how often do you want coaches in a meeting room to really analyze their kicking situation, right? If you got a guy that can do it, you keep the guy that can do it. You might evaluate every other position, but if your kicker's kicking it through the uprights, it's one less thing to worry about. But what Brock Purdy has been doing is pretty impressive and really impressive and is sort of making a name for this title that I think is losing a little bit of its luster given the nature of where we are, but still is kind of fun to have. You do expect, I mean, am I being overly cynical here to think that eventually there's going to be a two interception game coming where he just struggles and the bubble's got to burst at some point. Yeah. I mean, I know we get really excited about this as a sporting society sometimes where we catch on the wave of some young player. It doesn't matter, like a Jeremy Lin in basketball or something where we're finding this diamond in the rough. But eventually it kind of goes away. There's something that doesn't last. Sometimes it lasts forever and ever and ever, like Tom Brady. But sometimes it's got a brief period in the sunlight and then the clouds come and it darkens the skies a little bit. All right, we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Colbert continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Colbert.
On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Colbert, that is Ron with two N's. Michael in Atlanta, the 2009 draft suck-up was Mr. Irrelevant, but just a few picks off the same draft was Mr. Almost Irrelevant, Julian Edelman. Good point, Michael. Well done. I always like Michael's statistics or stats or information. It pops up every now and then. Julian Edelman. That is absolutely correct. So, nevertheless, everybody's got Brock Purdy fever, at least. I am buying into this team. I am really, like, when you and I sit back and process the postseason, I might pick this team to win, to go all the way. I'll have to look to see what the Bills look like when we get there, or the Chiefs look like to get there. But, God, I'm kind of falling for this 49ers team, and I don't know. I don't know if it's a Kyle Shanahan thing. I don't know if it's a defense thing. I am really impressed with the, they're scary. They are a scary team to play because they just don't let you breathe. Speaking of Bills, they've got a game coming up against the Miami Dolphins this weekend. They're expected to have, let me guess, winter weather in Buffalo. Remember when people talk about
But are they going to move this one?
Right. Are they going to move this one to Detroit? Right. Yeah. What's coming down? Is it a big storm?
No, Jim I don't Cantore think so because no, Jim Cantore hasn't moved yet. So.
Hasn't moved there yet?
So. No, they haven't mobilized him.
Gosh. So anyway, this is going to be two games. They say it's going to be 60 degrees between the two games in terms of temperature. They played in Miami in early September. It was boiling hot. And now they're going to be in cold, wintry weather. Not surprising. If you schedule a game in Miami and a schedule a game in Buffalo in December, that's what you're going to get. It's not like it's going to be balmy, right?
But yeah, what are they crying about? Didn't the Chargers do that in a week?
They did. The Chargers played in Miami in the divisional round in the AFC in 82 in hot, humid, gross weather. And then they went to the Freezer Bowl against Cincinnati a week later. Yeah, exactly. And in between, they got to be in sunny 75-degree San Diego. God bless Dan Fouts and company. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. Here's the problem. In that game, right, is Miami is a great passing team. They're the number two passing offense in the NFL. Running game, you know, I guess when you throw the ball, you don't necessarily have to establish a running game. But in weather like that, you're going to have to. Who knows what the wind's going to do to the football? Who knows what the snow is going to do in terms of grip and whatnot? Listen, by the way, if you're giving advice to Tua Tagovailoa, don't say things like it snows in Alabama too. It doesn't snow in Alabama like lake effect snow in Buffalo. I lived in New Hampshire. It doesn't snow in New Hampshire like lake effect snow in Buffalo. We used to be buried up to our eyeballs in snow and go, well, at least we're not Buffalo. Like, that's how bad it can get over there. That is going to be crazy. For people who have not experienced, if you're on the team. Now, again, you look down your roster, there are probably a bunch of people that have played there in snow, whether they were on the Bills in the past or on other teams that played there in the snow. But Tua, it's not the same. I've been to Alabama when it's cold. I've been to Alabama when it snowed. I understand, like, it can get chilly. It's not coming off the lake. It's the lake. So, expect this kind of game. The one thing about snow games is, as many of you know, when you get this weather, there is an element, part of the preparation and analysis of the game is talking about players that are accustomed to it, that know how to play in it and know what to do in it, but never forget the element that when you get to games like this, that the weather is just going to make that ball do funny things, no matter who's holding it, no matter which team is utilizing it. Do we expect the Bills in a wintry game to beat a team from Miami? Of course we do. But in the end, that ball could slip out of anybody's hands. That ball can be affected by the wind no matter who's throwing it. So there's always this element of, you think you know, but you're not 100% sure. You know what? It's like if you play golf, for example, and you're on a links type course in windy conditions. Yes, Scottish, European, British players, Ireland players are more accustomed to that, so you can handicap it in that way. But in football, it's not like that. The Bills can be well prepared for this kind of thing, but a gust of wind here could blow the ball right into the hands of a Dolphins defender. anybody on the Bills could have a catch or a run that the ball slips out of their hands and a fumble is on the, you just don't know. But if you're handicapping it, you go in Buffalo's favor. The Dolphins are looking for the season sweep, though, after beating them earlier this year. But now this is the fun time where we start looking at teams and their place and where they're headed. I think I brought this up earlier this week. Did you know the Carolina Panthers, if they win out, they're in the postseason? What would be a more interesting story for the 2022 season? The 49ers going to the playoffs and possibly making a Super Bowl run with three different quarterbacks? Or the Carolina Panthers, who continue to act like they have nothing to play for and yet have everything to play for?
And make it to the playoffs?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like they didn't wake up one day in a mirror and go, oh, wait, we don't have a coach, our star player's gone, and we got rid of a quarterback we brought in this season.
Yeah.
Back to the old guy.
I would love to be a reporter in Charlotte, because I'd love to have like somebody on the podium, like Steve Wilks, or if I could get the general manager, even better, and just go, are you rebuilding, or what's exactly happening here? What are you doing? Because you're not supposed to have both, right? You're not supposed to be doing both. You're not supposed to be shedding salary for the future, bringing in quarterbacks and releasing quarterbacks, firing head coaches, again, trading your best players, and also, hey, by the way, if we win the next four games, which are actually kind of doable, we win the whole thing. We win the division and go to the postseason.
You know who this team reminds me of?
Which one?
Major League's Cleveland Indians.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a great point.
Like almost like Carolina Panthers were going to move someplace else. Like, oh, we're going to move to Oakland because there's not going to be a team there, blah, 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 whatever. Players win. Let's just win the whole thing.
Now I'm kind of pulling for them to do that. They got to play Pittsburgh this weekend. Steelers may not have Kenny Pickett. But what a wild story that would be. Because find me a team that has done more to show they're giving up on the season than the Carolina Panthers, who could have a chance to make the playoffs. Now, will they make the playoffs? I don't know. It's a big ask for a team that is, you know, struggling still, no matter what, to win four games. But again, I looked at their schedule. I don't think the four games are all that daunting. And here's the interesting statistic, because I like to dive in a little bit of numbers here. And we're going to get to more of this coming up next hour. So Sam Darnold has taken over the team, right? He's taken over the offense. They have had 30 drives under Sam Darnold. Now, if you take out the kneel downs, so if you take out the drives that just ended on kneel downs, he's gotten like 5 touchdowns, 6 field goals, and no turnovers in these two games that he has started at quarterback. Like that's effective. Now, he beat the Broncos and they beat the Seahawks. Now, the Broncos can't score, but they can absolutely keep you out of the end zone, and they can absolutely get you 3 and out and force you to punt. And while the Seahawks defense is just a wide open colander, still it's impressive enough. So here's the official statistic: 20 drives, excluding kneel downs, 5 touchdowns, 6 field goals, no turnovers. That's playing good football. But again, what have the Panthers done all season? They have given you that major league example is perfect, because the brass is doing everything to indicate to the fan base, not this season, folks, nothing to see here. And if it wasn't for the god awful play of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we wouldn't even be talking about them. Look at the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons are in the same position.
Yeah.
The Falcons are a game out. Guess what
they stepped it up a notch, didn't they? Benched Marcus Mariota. Yeah, so we're going to go with the new guy.
Marcus Mariota is done. They're going to done. He's like, I think he's going to have a knee operation, but they were like, "Yeah, thanks for everything." Desmond Ridder is going to be the starting quarterback. They're making a quarterback change. A lot of it is, you know, a lot of it's there's a combination of injury, but at the same time we want to go in another direction, cuz they don't have passing game whatsoever. And even though it's a long shot, it's a real long shot, they would need a lot of things to take place. The Saints aren't out of it either at 4-9. They haven't been officially eliminated from the conversation as well. Tampa Bay should be running away with this thing. Tampa Bay should be like the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans are playing terrible football now. They've lost three in a row, right? They just fired John Robinson, their general manager, which, by the way, has been fine for Mike Vrabel, who didn't really get along with John Robinson to begin with. But they're a team that's lost three straight. They've got Derrick Henry, who's still the number two rusher in the league. He's got six 100-yard games this season. But they're struggling. But you know what? They got a two-game lead over Jacksonville. They're not exactly sweating it. The Buccaneers, you know who they're playing this weekend? Cincinnati. If the Buccaneers lose to Cincinnati, which absolutely can happen, right? Because the Bengals have won five in a row. If Carolina beats a Steelers team, then they have Mitch Trubisky. Or the Atlanta Falcons beat a New Orleans Saints team that has got nothing to show for it. Either one of those teams win, tied for first in the NFC South. Right? And yet, look, we've done this act before with bad divisions, right? We've had this before where Washington made the playoffs a couple of years ago with a lousy record because that's just the way the ball bounces. But I'm not talking about Carolina winning a bad division. We've seen teams win bad divisions. I'm talking about Carolina with the possibility of winning a bad division in which Tom Brady is fourth in the league in passing and they can't score points. And you've done everything you possibly could to give up on the season. That's an incredible story. Now, the 49ers, right, going back to them for a second, are they a great story because of the three quarterbacks, the three different starting quarterbacks this season, and now being one of the top teams in the NFL? Yeah. But let's be honest. The fortunes of that team are about how great they play defense, how aggressive they're on defense. And oh, by the way, in mid-October, they landed one of the most dynamic players the league has to add on to an offense that had one of the most dynamic players the league has in Deebo Samuel. But Carolina, they gave away one of the most dynamic players in the game. If you have any ounce of talent, they're finding ways to get rid of you. They got rid of Matt Rhule, and that was a good step because they couldn't survive anything with the way he was conducting that team. But coach, you know, quarterback, another quarterback, now you're back to the guy you didn't want to have in the first place, so the reason you went and got another quarterback. You got rid of McCaffrey. You got rid of Willie Anderson. It's every indication, and yet here they are at a chance to win it all. It's kind of a fun story. It's kind of a fun story. All right, again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue his wake-up call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Can you believe that a week from now, it's going to be just before Christmas weekend?
Yeah, no.
Like, golly, this time goes by too fast.
It does. It feels like it's slow, and then just somebody just hits the fast forward button.
I know. It's crazy, because how many times have we complained about summer dragging and dragging, and then they go, here's some fun stuff, and oh, by the way, in a blink of an eye, it'll be done. Yep. So if you haven't got your Christmas shopping done, make sure you get your Christmas shopping done, I guess. I went yesterday afternoon, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm not a big shopping person. Like, I don't mind shopping. Like, I used to take the kids to we go shopping for my wife and whatnot. We used to go make a day of it. So I would take my kids and I'd go, look, this is the mall time. We're going to the mall. It's going to stink. It's going to be crowded. But dad's going to take you out to a really nice lunch. So everybody, let's go. Let's have fun. So we'd go to the mall. We'd spend a day buying my wife some stuff for the holidays and whatnot, make a day of it, go to a lunch wherever they wanted to go. And that was it, except Chuck E. Cheese. I never did the Chuck E. Cheese thing alone. Don't advise it. I think it's a two-parent thing. If you have little kids and you take them to Chuck E. Cheese, I think it's a two-parent thing, or at least two people, a two-adult thing. But nevertheless, that's what I used to do.
I think it's avoid all at all costs.
Yeah,
things.
I made the joke one time that I had to take my kids to Chuck E. Cheese to pay for my sins. So yeah. That was like I had to atone for all of my sins by taking my kids to Chuck E. Cheese. So it kids love that joint, don't they? I love that joint.
Ah, God.
When I was younger, it existed, but it was like Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Galaga, yeah. Dragon's Lair. Like now it's all tickets.
Right.
So it's just every kid wants tickets to get the jump.
I mean, you had ticket games, but it was skee-ball. Yeah.
What Chuck, right, exactly.
That was pretty much it.
What Chuck E. Cheese was for me in the when I was young was what Dave and Buster's kind of is now.
Yeah.
Like real video games.
Which is probably why Dave and Buster's exists.
Yeah, right?
Because, you know, the guy who invented Dave and Buster's probably went to Chuck E. Cheese a lot. It's like, man, where's the restaurant with the arcade games?
I'm not kidding, man. You get me a retro arcade somewhere, I'm finding you. I love them. I took my kids to one, and they were so eye-popping bewildered that what I was showing them was fun. Like, I was showing my son Burger Time once.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you go over the patty and you drop it down and then you have to get up these stairs and this ladder and then you have to cross the burger and let it drop and then the salt and peppers are chasing you. And he's like, and this is what? And
that's it?
That's all you do.
Yeah,
huh?
When we were in Reno, we were staying at Circus Circus, they had a bubble hockey game.
Oh, yeah, America versus Soviets?
America versus Soviets.
Yeah.
And I, you know, had my kids playing that, and they're like, yeah, this is great, Dad, but, you know, what do you get when you win? I'm like, right. Pride!
You get to push the boo button. Isn't that fun? Look at that. Boo! Huh? How cute is that?
Hey, score, yeah. Cheers for you?
Yeah, no, it's...
Well, they were just like, eh.
It's like, not...
Come on, bubble
seriously,
hockey.
Video games from us to them, it's not even apples to apples. It's like apples to an orangutan. It's two totally different things that don't really have any connection at all. It's nuts. All right, we've got the full schedule of the NFL. We're going over every game, the good, the bad, and all of that. And then we're also talking to Jared Dubin at 8:40 or 40 past the hour. So continue along. It's Wake Up Call.